is Deb, and I'm an alcoholic. I came into AA when I was 24 years old. I came in because my mother sought help for me. She went to see a priest that she had had a lot of contact with, and that's how I got to the doors. So to back up a little bit, I had sort of a healthy fear of alcohol for a while. I had an older sister that was an alcoholic, and I knew what alcohol did to people, and I was never going to be like her. I went about my way. I went to high school. In high school, I found drugs, which I thought were perfectly okay to do because all my friends were doing them. It was the early 70s, and drugs were very, very prevalent. And it wasn't until after I had graduated from high school, I got a job, and I worked at a company, and I worked with some people that were a little bit older than me. And when I turned 18, they had just lowered the drinking age to 18 in Massachusetts, and my friends at work said, "Oh, Deb, we're going to take you out for a drink." And I had no defenses. I had managed not to drink up until then, but I did go out with my friends, and when I drank that night, I remember thinking that I'm different. I didn't act like my sister. I didn't cause a scene. I didn't get into a fight with anybody. The police didn't come. Everything was okay. And I thought, I'm different. I can drink. And that was the start. I didn't last long. I drank and I drugged, and I ended up in places I didn't want to be, with people I did not want to be with. And I this was sort of a pattern. My drinking was unpredictable. I never knew what was going to happen to me. I just would pick up a drink, and you know, the drink would take me. And I totally can identify with that. That, you know, I took the drink, and the drink took me. And to back up a little bit, I did have one drinking episode when I was 16. And I had gone out with my niece, who's only 9 months younger than me, and we had gone out with these two boys that we were going out with at the time, and they had a six-pack of beer, and I drank two, my niece drank two, and the two guys each had one. And that night, after those two beers, I wanted more. And we went and found more. We went to visit a friend who gave us a bottle of champagne. And my niece and I drank the champagne. And I got deathly ill, threw my guts up, and swore that I would never do it again. But it didn't, you know, it obviously, I did it again. So, let's see. I after high school, as I said, I got this job, and then I quit this job, and I ended up going to school, and I knew when I went to school that I was really going to have to buckle down and do what I needed to do to get through school. So I controlled my drinking and drugging, and I graduated, and I became self-employed. I went into business with my aunt, and she had had a business since the 1930s, and I went into business with her, and I started up again with the drinking and the drugging. And my aunt was an alcoholic, and I remember going into the office one day, and I was hungover, and she asked me what was wrong with me, and I told her I was hungover, and she said, "Oh, I can fix that." And she opened the drawer in the desk and she gave me a nip. And she said, drink this, you'll be fine. And I learned about the drink that fixes you up when you have a hangover. And so, you know, this went on. My aunt and I would go out to lunch. We would go to the, you know, the local establishments in downtown Lowell. We would drink. And, you know, my aunt always made it back to work. She was a much more functional drunk, I think, than I was, because there were many times when I couldn't make it back. I just, you know, would just blow off my clients and not even think about it. At this time, I was living at home with my mother, and my mother was, you know, witnessing all of these behaviors, and that's when she went to see this priest. And she came home and she said, Debbie, this man can help you. All you have to do is call him. And I don't know why on that particular day I decided to call him. I imagine it was divine intervention. But I picked up the phone and I made the call. And he was funny. He said, I wasn't sure you were going to call. Your mother said you're a scaredy cat. And I said, oh, my mother knows me well. She knew. I was very, very shy, introverted. Alcohol and drugs gave me that, you know, false courage that we hear about. I was able to talk to people. I was able to socialize. I always, my whole entire life, had anxiety, always. I remember having my very first anxiety attack when I was, the first one I remember, I was 7 years old. It was my first communion, and I had a full-blown anxiety attack in the church, and I couldn't make my first communion with the other kids. I had to be taken out of the church, and my dad came, and we went after, and we saw the priest, and I ended up receiving my communion by myself. I guess the other significant thing I should mention about my childhood is that my dad died when I was 9 years old. And at that time, I got angry at God. I thought, what kind of God would take my father away from me? I was 9 years old. My little sister was six. I had older sisters, but they were married, and my mom was left with, you know, a 16-year-old, a 9-year-old, and a 6-year-old, and I was really mad at God. So going to see this priest was not, you know, it was sort of out of character for me, because I didn't want anything to do with God or the church or anything else. So I went to visit this priest, and he asked me if I thought I was an alcoholic, after I had told him some stuff. And I, of course, figured my mother had gone in there and spilled her guts, so I told him, no, I didn't think so. And he asked me if I would take a test. So I said, sure. And he gave me this test, and there were 20 questions on it. And after I had taken the test, well, as I was taking the test, I should say, he would say to me, you know, have you ever had a morning drink? And I would say, well, yeah, maybe once or twice, but I don't do it all the time. And he would say, have you ever had a morning drink? And every single question, he would do that so that I couldn't, like, I was trying to, you know, just pass it off like it was no big deal, and he would always just make it a point to say to me, have you ever done this? And so after I took the test, he gave me the paper and told me to look at it and read the bottom. And on the bottom it said, if you have answered yes to three or more of these questions, you are definitely an alcoholic. And I had answered yes to 16 of the questions. And I still wasn't convinced. I said to him, you know, I'm too young, I'm too smart, the people in my family, you know, they're worse than I am. And he said, Debbie, alcoholism is like an elevator and it only goes in one direction. It goes down. He said, you can get off at any floor you want or you can go to the bottom. And I said, well, you know, if you gave this test to everybody I know, everybody would, you know, say the same things I said. And he said, that's because birds of a feather flock together. And, you know, everything that I had to say, he had something, you know, that would counter what I was trying to say to him. And so it went. He finally asked me if I would go to an AA meeting, and I agreed to do that. And but I told him that absolutely under no circumstances would I go alone, because I was in fact a scaredy cat, as my mother said. And so he said, that's okay, I'll call somebody. And he made the phone call while I was sitting there, and he asked a woman to meet me at a meeting. He told me where to go, what her name was, and that began my journey in AA. I went to that meeting that night. It was a Monday night. It was in Burlington. It was July 8th of 1979. And I met this woman. Her name is Diane, and she became my first sponsor. She was really, really good for me for a very long time. She knew that, you know, I was very shy, very introverted. I would not go to a meeting alone under no circumstances. And, you know, if I didn't have someone like her, if I had just been thrown into the ring and said, you know, go ahead and do it, I don't think I would have. Diane took me, or she would meet me at meetings. If she couldn't go to a meeting, she would send me to a meeting with her husband. She would find people. She would be at a meeting and she'd say, you know, I think so-and-so is going to a meeting tomorrow night. Why don't you go ask them if they're going and you can meet them there. And, you know, thank God, because that's really how it went for a while, until I got comfortable in AA and I met people, and then I was able to walk through the door and not... and it didn't matter, you know, because I knew that I would know somebody in that room. And so when I got to AA, I still had a lot of reservations. They told me to identify, not compare, and I tried to do that. It was hard because I identified for other people in my family, but I knew in my heart that I was in the right place. There was no question about it. Eventually, I heard, you know, everything I needed to hear. I heard my story. I heard, you know, things that I was identifying with. And I took the suggestions because I was afraid not to. I knew enough about myself that if I left AA, I really didn't believe I would ever come back, because I have a lot of pride, and I think that would have gotten my way. So I went to meetings. I got involved in a group. Diane became my sponsor. I joined a group. I went on commitments. I became involved in service. I have done, you know, everything that was suggested. I went to step meetings right from the get-go. It was suggested to me that I go to step meetings, because if I didn't change the person that I brought into the halls, then I would not be able to stay sober, and I wanted to stay sober. The one thing that, you know, when I would hear the preamble read at the beginning of the meeting, and they would say, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stay sober. I could identify with that. And that's what I wanted to do. I didn't want to drink, because I knew where alcohol would take me. I got married in AA when I was like 4 years sober. I married a man that was also in recovery. We had a son together. We also had he had two children prior from another marriage, and they lived with us. So we had three children, and you know, things went on, life went on. I made friends in AA. I've had a lot of really wonderful things happen in my sobriety, and I've had a lot of very tragic things happen in my sobriety. And I've learned that I don't have to drink no matter what. That was drilled into me. I believe that I got a very, very solid foundation in AA. I try to work the program. I try to walk the walk and not just talk the talk. I've taken pretty much every suggestion that was given to me. As I said, I got married. This marriage, I stayed married, stayed in this marriage for 18 years, and then we got divorced, and that was probably, of all the things that have happened in my life, that was definitely high on the list of the most painful. But again, I stayed sober. I did what I was taught to do. I went to meetings. I asked for help. I have a network of friends. I have friends that, you know, when I first got sober, I met, and they're still my friends today. We're supportive of each other, and we've carried each other through a lot of stuff. And I've literally grown up in AA. Have since gotten remarried, and you know, I have a good relationship with my husband. I have a great relationship with my family. I'm able to be a good family member. I'm a good mother. I'm a good sister. I'm a good friend, and I'm a good wife. And I know that none of that would have happened if I had not been sober. I have a 27-year-old son who's never seen his mother drink, and to me, I've been around the program for a very long time, and I've listened to women speak, and I, you know, it breaks my heart when I hear them speak of, you know, drinking through their children's childhoods and whatnot, and I'm so, so eternally grateful that that my son has never seen me drink. I have a great relationship with my sisters, with other family members, my nieces, my nephews, and today I believe it's because of everything that I've learned in AA. I'm able to put in my program, you know, the 12th step says that, you know, we take this into our daily lives, and that's what I've been able to do. Because I've done the work, I've done what was suggested, and I continue to do that today. When I get up in the morning, I get on my knees, just as it was suggested to me 32 years ago. I get on my knees, I ask for help, I ask for guidance, and I ask God to just take me through the day and show me what I'm supposed to do today. And I try to live my life by the principles of the program. I go to meetings. I still, to this day, I attend step meetings. I work the steps in my life. And at the end of the day, when I come home, I get on my knees again. And I thank God for a day of sobriety. And I'm also, things that I heard in the program, you know, to have an attitude of gratitude, and I try to always have an attitude of gratitude. I go out throughout my day, and I purposely look for things to be grateful for. And I never have to look very far, because there's so much. even when things are really horrible and really tragic things have happened in my life, I can always find things to be grateful for. And if I focus on that rather than focusing on the negative stuff, then, you know, it gets me through the day. And I just put one foot in front of the other, and I show up, and I do, you know, what was suggested to me 32 years ago. It hasn't changed. The program has not changed. I still do the same things today that I did then. And I've managed to stay sober. And that's it.
Great.
I don't know what that is.